Bienvenido, damas y caballeros. Welcome back to Freeform Radio on the Freeform Network. Remember to follow us on Twitter at FFR Podcast or Freeform Network. Not sure which one it is. And remember to send in those questions and suggestions to ffnquestions@gmail.com. Again, for Freeform Radio, my name is Daniel. Got with me today, Noel.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? Thank you for joining us.
And it is just the two brothers today. Andy is out taking care of some business, but I'm sure he'll be back on the next recording. So let's jump into this one, Noel. Noel, busy week. I know you're always getting in tune with some TV, and actually I got quite a bit too as well that I've been watching. But why don't you fill us in on some of your favorite movies of all time that you've been watching or that you're up to?
So yeah, I've been building my collection for like a little over, you know, three, four months. Ever since I got the PS5, I've been trying to build like this Blu-ray 4K collection. And I wanted to keep it to just like the movies that really influenced me as a kid or that meant something to me growing up. That were my favorites. And while my favorites probably aren't considered like objectively the greatest of all time, to me, they're my favorites of all time.
Right.
And so, yeah, just to throw out some, because it's hard. I was thinking about it recently, like, can anyone name one movie as the top? Because
I think it really...
For real, that would be yours.
No, but that, I mean, it's kind of like you mentioned, it's not the greatest movie of all time, but it holds a spot in your heart as a favorite for you. So for
right, yeah, no, I completely agree. I think depending on the mood that you're in, there are certain movies that will scratch that itch that you have. And so like if I'm looking for something that's like has action, I just watched Terminator 2 the other day. I got that
classic.
In 4K. It's so good, man. I was just like, this
and
movie,
it still holds up, man.
Yeah, it still holds up this many times, like many years later. When I watched it as a kid, there was some things that like went over my head. Like I just wasn't intellectually capable of like really understanding what was going on. I just know Terminator, there was a bad one, there's a good one. He's trying to save John Connor. And that's really where I was at as a kid. Watching as an adult now, I'm seeing so many different angles. I'm understanding some of the, you know, the dirtier jokes they were telling. And it's such a complete movie. It really hits it on so many different levels. I think James Cameron really built like a masterpiece with that movie.
And I, you know, not to that Terminator 1 is better, but Terminator 1 was a great movie on its own, but Terminator 2 took it to another level.
Definitely. It gave Arnold Schwarzenegger a voice, whereas in the first one he didn't really talk as much. It gave him like almost like a soul. Like it gave Terminator like a soul to be able to learn, interact. And yeah, I thought it was cool that they had John Connor and it was Edward Furlong. He was like a good actor in that, and I believed him. Like they were all good actors to the point where what I saw on screen, it might as well have been like real life. It felt like it was happening. And
now, Andy's mentioned before, once we started getting into the HD era, like 4K, and WWE made the move in the transition, that it really brought to light how ugly some people are and how like you get to see like the not ugly, but you see the definition of everybody and you get to see imperfections in a lot of people because it's natural. You know, all of us got, you know, little scars, little blemishes, you know, you got acne or you got whatever's going on in your life and you got to see it a lot more on live characters. And he said that he noticed it most when WWE transitioned. Now that you got this 4K Terminator 2, do you still see it in the same great light? Like, man, this CG is the best, because it was the best when it first came out. It was like awesome. The liquid Terminator and just all the CG stuff. The end kind of fake Terminator half face thing, I got to say that was kind of wonky. And if he was going to do like a not a Spielberg, George Lucas, and retouch up the movie, that would probably be the one scene that I would tell him, bro, throw some CG on that face and kind of make it more look more natural. But it, does it still hold up in 4K?
You know, I thought it did. Because like when I know what you're talking about, when at the very end he gets his face like busted up and all that, right, and they're in the refinery, it does look like a little dated, but at the same time, it looks better than some of like the newer early 2000s movies, where like the CG was like fairly new and people weren't really, you know, good with it. I think ultimately the CG they used in Terminator was really well done. For example, when the T-3000 or T-1000,
the liquid one,
when he gets frozen and then, you know, like in Terminator shoots him, he's like, hasta
spoilers. La vista. Spoilers for the people out there.
If you haven't watched it, that's there.
What's wrong with you, right?
But when they thought he killed him, right? He shoots him and breaks into a million pieces, and it starts melting and it starts coming together. I thought that was like really cool. Like the CG of that, it looks so cool. And when, like, going back at the start of the film, when they blow up the semi truck, when he crashes into like the pillar in like that sewer, like
the viaduct thing. Yeah.
And when he comes out of that and he like forms himself back into like human form, that CG, it holds up enough that it doesn't look like ugly. It looks good, you know. It just, I guess because I overlook it, you know. I don't judge it as harshly. I think ultimately James Cameron always spends a lot of money on CG, which is why his movies tend to look like always beautifully like done. Right. Like even the Avatar movies, he spends a crazy amount on CG and technology. So I'm pretty sure he invested a decent amount, and that's why it holds up still.
No, for sure, man. And shout outs to in that viaduct scene where the Terminator flips the shotgun in his hand, one handed. I always thought that was awesome when I first watched it. I'm like, cool, man. Look at it. He's just cocking the gun with one hand. Really nice. That whole movie's got a bunch of sweet spots that when you watch it, you're like, yes, this is awesome. the start of the movie with the name of the group's eclipsing me now, but Welcome to the Jungle. That whole start where he's revving the bike and the parents like, hey, go inside and clean your room, and he's just like, vroom, vroom, man. Awesome stuff, man. That whole movie is cool.
Yeah, then he goes to hack an ATM, then they go to the arcades, like,
oh yeah,
like the whole movie, man, it like was getting you engaged into it, like building the world, you know. It really felt like more realistic, like these are kids, you know, breaking the rules, and then all of a sudden now you have Terminator getting in the middle of it. And then when the Terminator kills the foster parents or the adopted parents.
Oh, right.
Yeah, that was crazy, dude. And he freaking stabs the guy in the eye. Oh, dude.
It was nuts. You know, maybe it connected more. I can speak for myself that I was a teenage person at that time, and seeing a teenage focused movie with a, you know, a protagonist that was a teenage, it kind of maybe made me feel that, yeah, that could be me, you know. I could be John Connor doing these crazy stuff. I don't know why it connected so much to me that anytime Terminator 2 is on, if I'm flipping through, I just have to stop and watch it for a minute. And then every now and then when I'm flipping through Netflix or whatever else streaming service you're looking at, if you see Terminator 2 and you're like, you can't really figure out what you're going to watch, I always settle on it. I'm like, yeah, let me put this guy on because I know I'm going to have a good time.
Definitely, man. I 100% agree with that. There's a lot of movies that made me feel that way, where maybe the protagonist was closer to my age and I was like putting myself in that position. So I related to it more. I felt like I bonded with that character, so that anything that would happen to that character, I was like invested in. It was like almost like it was happening to me. So like if the character was getting injured or in a position where they might get hurt, I was like on the edge of my seat, like, oh shit, are they gonna get hurt? Are they gonna, you know, is this gonna go down or whatever? And so yeah, Terminator 2, I hold it up as like one of my favorites. There's so many more, and I could talk for hours on it. Yeah, just to rattle off a couple quick ones, you know, Lord of the Rings number 2 was one of my favorites. Back to the Future number 1, one of my favorites.
Nice.
The Mask of Zorro I just got in 4K. Django Unchained, Desperado, Reservoir Dogs. I just got a bunch of Quentin Tarantino. That's when I'm looking at it. So I'm like rattling off all these. Jackie Brown I just got. Inglourious Bastards. I got the new Joker movie with Joaquin Phoenix. They're making a sequel, I heard.
Right.
But yeah. Oh, and Hook. Do you remember Hook with Robin Williams?
Yeah, Robin Williams. Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't really remember it too well. So either I kind of phased out, but I kind of remember reception being good for it. So maybe I should rewatch it again because I don't really remember too much of it.
Oh, I recommend it, man. It's one of those great movies where, like, it takes you to, like, another world, but, like, it does it in a way where, like, it's believable. Because, like, Peter Pan, when I first watched it, I didn't really care how old Robin Williams was, but now that I'm older and I'm, like, more able to, like, analyze this film, like, with more of, a harsher critique, I'm like, Robin Williams was, like, 40 years old playing the character of Peter Pan. So I was like, they kind of casted him at an older age, but he still pulled it off, you know? Like, that was the whole gimmick, is that he was an older Peter Pan, but he had to remember who he was to be able to save his kids. And it put in that angle of him being a workaholic and, like, completely 180 to who Peter Pan was, who was more, like, free-spirited. And so it was like a journey of refinding his childhood spirit and like building that up. And I mess with it. Like it's a good movie. It holds up to me. And the flying scenes I thought were really cool. I don't see any like wires or anything. It seemed really well done, you know? So
I do kind of remember it being well made. But I can't really remember too much of the plot, and you're just kind of describing it. It really doesn't ring a bell in my head, so I really should probably watch it again, because a lot of those other ones that you were rattling off, I remember like Pulp Fiction. I just finished watching that like a week ago. I rewatched it, and man, I was like saying some of the text. I could remember the speeches and parts of the movies like the back of my hand. So yeah, Hook, I'm gonna have to put that on my view list to watch it. And that's actually funny you said Mask of Zorro. When we were trying to look for a movie to watch last night, I stopped at Mask of Zorro, and I'm like, yeah man, I kind of dig that movie. I just don't like the whole intro part where he's like training with Hoffman, or what's that other character that was training?
Anthony Hopkins.
Anthony Hopkins. And I was just like, man, it kind of drags out too much. Like, I wish I had more Zorro stuff versus the becoming of Zorro. But it was still a good movie. And I almost pressed play on it, but I kept moving on.
Another good one, if you like that kind of fight style and that kind of action sequence. Another two that I have that kind of mean something to me growing up, Three Musketeers with
That's a good one. Yeah,
Kiefer Sutherland got what's his name, one of the Estevez family members.
Right,
blanking on his name, but yeah, that's another one with good like swordplay and stuff.
Oh man,
you need a crystal, dude.
You need to take some more lion's mare, or what's that called?
Lion's mane. Yeah.
There you go. that's a sidetrack your article, but I was actually talking to Alana about that a day or so ago, and I'm like, man, I think I'm gonna have to start taking this shit that Noel keeps telling me about, because, dude, it's sometimes my mind spaces out and I forget the most dumbest thing, like how you were trying to remember right now that actor's name. And I'm just like, man, I used to be a little more snappy. I'm not sure what the hell's going on, man. Either this is like, you know, 3 years residue of COVID or something. I have no idea, but I used to be a little more snappy, man.
I think it just happens, man. There's so much that we fill our minds with, and there's so many things that when we get older, we don't have time to like really just take our time to remember all these small things. We're thinking about work and having to get gas in our car on Monday or whatever, you know, the small things that make up our daily life, that we small things like this, it'll slip our mind. Charlie right. Sheen. That's what I was talking about. Charlie Sheen.
Oh, right, right. That's right. You know, a guy at work explained it fairly well. I know we're talking about movies, but the whole memory thing. He mentioned something like your brain is like you got like a 1 terabyte hard drive, and that's your brain. And the more you do as you grow older, you could expand that memory, or some of the memory decays and gets less because you're not nourishing it. You're not doing things to make it grow. And then the 1 terabyte, let's say you do have a 1 terabyte and that's what you have, it's capped. So you could only recall certain information, and some information is like an old HHD. So it's like at the back of the hard drive, and some stuff is towards the front. So it's easier to get it. So sometimes that's why you see people like, yeah, what is it? What's that thing? So they're searching through the back of the hard drive, and they're kind of trying to get and spin that disk to get to that section. And then finally it pops and they're like, yes, this is what it is. This is what I wanted to talk about.
Yeah. And to take it another level, like some of the memory banks or whatever you want to call it, it's like trees. They're called dendrites, and they branch to other things. So right. When you remember one thing, it might make you remember something else you weren't even thinking about. But like that's how it works. It just connects to other things. And yeah, the brain, we don't even know the full like extent of the brain, but like that is one part that I always thought was cool.
Yeah, I know the next episode, you know, not to give a peek into the future, but we were talking about space and how incredible that is. The brain, man. Now that's something that's really fascinating and incredible too, man.
Exactly. But yeah, man, so that's the movies that I was just starting to buy to build my collection. But I got some M. Night Shyamalan movies as well. And, you know, he's one of those directors that's like hit or miss. But the movies that I did like really hit, like Signs, The Visit, you know, those are good movies.
Signs, man. That's, you know, funny quick story on Signs. Me and me and Junior were trying to watch it because he wanted to watch something with me. And I'm like, let's watch this movie. And right away, he's just like, is this scary? I'm like, a little bit scary. He was like 10 years old or something. And I'm like, it's a little bit scary, but it's not bad. And he's just like, okay, because he doesn't really like horror or stuff like that. It like freaks him out. He'll have nightmares for days. So we start watching it, dude. And we get to the part where the alien is kind of poking his foot out of the cornfield. Yeah. You know, because shit, speaking of memory, what the hell is this guy? Mel Gibson. He's running through the cornfield, and then he just stops and shines his light, and then that alien just like sticks his leg back in, and then that's he's like, nope, I can't watch this no more. He's just like, that's it.
He threw in the towel. Huh?
So he's like, I can't watch this no more. So we stopped, and just recently we were looking for a movie to watch as a family, and I'm like, oh, Signs. I'm like, hey man, you're gonna be 14 this year, how about watching this? You want to watch it now? And he's just like, nah, I kind of remember it was really scary. I don't want to see it again.
Man. Yeah, no, it has its moments, man. It wasn't super scary, but I get what he means. Like, it's creepy, man. Because they make it seem like this alien's going to come to just murder you.
For sure.
It was really creepy being in the cornfields, I remember.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so speaking about M. Night Shyamalan, did you watch that new movie, Knock on Cabin, or what is it called?
Yeah, Knock on the Cabin, man. Not sure how much, have you seen it at all yourself?
No, I have it ready to go. I'm going to watch it. I just haven't seen it yet.
Okay. I won't spoil it too much, but yes, I have watched it.
I don't mind spoilers. I'll still watch it.
No, I'm not going to spoil it. Because that's the thing about M. Shyamalan movies, is that the reason why I've liked the majority of them, I would say it, out of the 10 movies he's made, I don't know if he's made 10, but let's say out of 10 movies that he's made, I've liked 8 of them. Two maybe were like misses, where like I didn't get it or I didn't enjoy it as much. Knock on the Cabin, to me, was a success. It's not the best of his. To me, definitely Signs. I See Ghosts. I forget the name of that movie, but that one was really good. I liked Breakable ones, the Unbreakable. I liked all of those. I thought those were pretty good. So I got to say, he makes good movies, and this Knock on Cabin is one of his better ones, but not his greatest one. Just for everybody out there, it's kind of like a doomsday movie. This group of four characters, they go to a cabin, and in the cabin there's this gay couple who have adopted a daughter, and they're in the cabin. They rented it. They're hanging out at the cabin, kind of doing the whole, you know, nature thing. And these group of four characters come to the cabin, knock on it, and then the story starts where they're asking the cabin goers, the gay couple, and then the daughter, that one of you have to sacrifice your life in order to stop the apocalypse. Otherwise, the world will end and millions of people are going to die. And so that's basically the premise of the movie. The entirety of the movie happens with they have to willfully select one of them to die so that the world can continue. And they let them multiple times to say yes. And every time they say no, this catastrophic thing happens. And I got to say, man, you're knowing that it's an M. Shyamalan, you're looking at everything, man. You're looking at any kind of like glimmer in the window, any kind of shine of light, any kind of zoom in on numbers. You're kind of trying to figure this puzzle out through the entire movie, or at least people who dig this kind of movie, I would assume that that's what they're doing, because that's what I was doing through the whole movie. Anytime anything was referenced in kind of like a pass off way, I right away would stick that into my brain, and I'm like, remember this and this was said, and is that going to be a clue to solve this puzzle? And man, I was watching, and I gotta say, like halfway through it, I kind of thought what the ending was gonna be, which ended up being one of my thoughts, but I was thinking 100 other things as well. And I didn't guess it, man. I didn't guess what had happened. And it, I gotta say, was totally different from all his other movies that I've seen. It was not what you would expect from all his other movies. And actually, before I even watched it, one of the reviewers that I kind of saw like a bullet review thing, because it sucks, I tried to not get spoiled at movies, but I saw a caption on the review of this Facebook feed that I was passing through, and it said, you will not guess the ending until the last 5 minutes or something like that. And I'm like, ah, whatever. So I mentioned that to Alana when we first started watching, and Junior watched it with us too. And sure enough, man, I did not see it until a minute or two before the credits started rolling. And I'm just like, dude, I did not see that being the ending. So it was totally different. I got to say, it's probably a different way of him doing his movies, where usually just like Signs, it's like, boom, this is the ending. It's the end climactic scene. And then you kind of see the reveal. They explain it. They go to some flashbacks. This was slightly different. It wasn't like that, where you kind of get this ending in your face, where it makes you realize, I'm such an idiot. I should have seen it from the 10 other things that he kind of showed me. This was definitely different and unique. And I liked it. I really dug it.
So was there no way to figure it out, or was it referenced at some point then?
I got to say that it's referenced multiple times throughout the movie. But it's, you're always looking for like this big picture ending, that it was something so simple that you thought about it for a glaring second, but then you're like, no, it's got to be this like huge butterfly effect thing. And so you kind of disregard it and you go on to the next thing. So
man, I'm intrigued. I'm going to probably watch it today, man.
Well, I don't want to overhype it either. I don't want to make it seem like it's going to be like the greatest mystery ever. But it's definitely an M. Shyamalan movie, in the sense that you're constantly thinking through the whole movie, trying to figure this puzzle out. And when you get to the ending, you'll either think, yeah, that was unique and different, or you're just going to think this was stupid. So I do see how some people are kind of one way or the other, but I dug it. I respected it for what it was. And I think it was a cool experience nonetheless.
Yeah, so, that reminds me of another movie he made called Devil, where there's like people trapped in an elevator. One of them is the devil, and they're essentially like, a lot of people end up dying.
How long ago was that? I don't even remember that one.
I want to say it's maybe like early to mid 2000s. Like
really?
2010 maybe, something like that. I remember watching it the first time. I had no idea who it was going to be. And it was almost like the movie Saw, if you ever watched the first movie.
Right.
Where the guy that's laying in he looks like he's dead.
Yeah,
the actual guy.
For sure.
Jigsaw. So I'm like, that. It's kind of like that. Like, you wouldn't imagine it's who it is. So that's why I'm like, all right, I'm intrigued now. Like, I want to see if I can figure it out. It's like a challenge. But at the same time, like, I like M. Night Shyamalan. He does a lot of good stuff that I like that others probably wouldn't. But like you said, he has like 10 really good movies. The whole Split series, the Unbreakable, Split, Glass.
For sure. They're
all good. Yeah.
Yeah, it's all good stuff, man. If you dig his style movies, I think you'll like it. Plus, it's just well made and it's different. It's something different that is not really done too often. And it'll definitely have you thinking throughout the whole time. But yeah, man, I've been watching a ton of stuff. Something else that you might be interested in, Noel. I finished watching Superman and Lois season one TV show. I know you recommended it, and to be honest, I think we spoke briefly about this, but I watched the first couple episodes and I was just like, holy shit, this is great. I love it. I know it's CW or whatever the
mm-hmm.
Yeah, CW, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, I know sometimes people don't like it, but I was just like, this is awesome, man. I'm like, this is exactly what Superman should be. An adult theme. As far as it portrays Superman as he's older, he's a family man, husband, father, while dealing with his superpowers, dealing with saving the world and being a dad and a husband and all the other stuff. And then, you know, just being normal to the point where he's got to deal with paying bills. He's got to deal with, you know, paying mortgages, doing his work because he has a job and stuff like that. So it's just like, it was a really good premise. I really liked the whole concept of the TV show. But like I had kind of mentioned to you, Noel, I got worried halfway through the season because it jumped into, you know, kind of like the usual stuff that CW does, where it's like the villain of the week. They kind of still had the backstory of Superman's life and how he deals with it. But I felt like it got a little too hokey as far as the villains. And especially when, to me, it jumped the shark or whatever that Fonz thing is, where he jumps over that shark with the jet skis. I don't know if you've ever seen that in Happy Days. But it was like that, man, where it's just like, dude, you're going off into a direction that I don't know what the hell you're doing, where one of the main characters or villains in the show ends up like, yeah, I'm your family member and this and that. And I was just like, oh, man, what the hell's going on? I'm not feeling this. I remember I talked to you and you're just like, no, man, it gets a little better. I struggled to watch like the last two or three episodes just because I was just like, man, I'm not feeling this, but Noelle told me it's going to get better. Let me keep powering through it. And I got to say, after I finished it, it redeemed it a little bit, but I'm still kind of on the negative side just because I didn't feel that whole last sequence, the Eradicator and the his son turns into this and that. And I'm just like, man, I don't know, man. I was digging so much the family man Superman thing where he was a dad, a father kind of aspect, and where this turned more into a Superman TV show where let's make these superpowered bad guys for him to fight versus him to just deal with the normal mundane stuff like his son breaking up with his girlfriend and crying and having trauma and dealing with that and having issues with depression because his son kind of feels different and ostracized. Like those were the things that were really speaking to me and not so much the superhero of the day.
I see what you mean. I will say that it does do a balancing act, and sometimes it teeters more towards the superhero part of it. And then it'll always find its way back, though. It'll always find its way back to the family man and how it relates, how it impacts the family as a whole. And you're going to see in the season two, it deals like Lois gets her chance to shine more. Because in the first season, they moved to Smallville. They lived in the city, and then they moved to Smallville after, spoilers for everyone, sorry, but so Superman's mother dies, and he goes and like inherits the farm and all that. He wants to like, you know, save it and like be a part of the community still. And so that's where the whole family aspect comes in, because now he makes like a solid effort to be more a part of the family. And the kids too want that because they hardly ever see their dad because he's Superman, right? So they do make a valiant effort to get him to have those moments. And in season two, you'll see that even more so. I think season one, they wanted to have a balance of this isn't just a drama. This isn't just like teeny bopper high school drama. This is also like a superhero show. And I think they actually balanced it out really well. But I know what you're talking about, the Eradicator part of it. I didn't really – it wasn't the best direction to go with, but it was the first season. So I kind of gave it a break for that reason. Season two, I had a little bit more critique on it, or a little bit more, like, focused. Like, I'm like, let's see if this goes in the CW direction, or is this going to go into that good, you know, high-quality direction. And I like season two. I thought it was cool.
Well, you're kind of talking me off the ledge because I was close to, and man, I'm a huge Superman mark. I'm wearing a Superman shirt right now. I wore it to church. This is my shirt that I wore to church today, Superman shirt. So I'm a huge mark. I love watching Superman stuff. And I was ready to not watch season two. That's how I kind of had that nasty taste at the end. But you're telling me it's a little more balanced. I'm kind of digging it again. I might watch season two, but yeah, kind of mixed feelings on season one, but still really good. Good production value. You could tell that they kind of blew their load at the start because the first couple of episodes, man, they're like awesome. The CG, some of the like they're huge catastrophic issues that Superman's dealing with. And towards the end, it's just, you know, superheroes flying fast and punching each other kind of thing. So I don't know if their budget got cut or they wasted the balance of the budget at the start. But still, half decent TV show. But yeah, maybe I'll watch season two now. I might have to go check it out and watch it.
Yeah, you're going to have more time spent on the family, Lois Lane, Lana Lang. The town, like the mayor, the newspaper, you're going to see more of all the other players in it. So I think it's worth at least trying it out and see how you like it.
No, yeah, for sure. And man, I didn't know that Lana Ling was that same girl from Entourage.
Yeah, dude.
I'm like, man, I've seen this lady before. I'm like, who is she? And then finally I had to Google the cast. And then, yeah, it was, I thought she looked familiar because it's been a while since I've even watched Entourage. But yeah, to see that it was the same character was kind of cool.
Yeah, it was E's girlfriend.
Yeah, E's girlfriend for many seasons. They kept having problems. And I think, spoilers, I think the season finale, they finally got back together or something like that.
Yeah, I never watched the movie. I got to watch the movie and see how it developed after that.
Yeah, I can't really recall. It's been a while. I know Andy was more of an Entourage super fan than I was. But, not much else going on. Watched a ton of TV, but I think we'll save that talk for next time. And let's jump into our article of the week. All right, Noel. Our article for this week is something from NBC News. It's a nonstop Kentucky prayer revival is going viral on TikTok, and people are traveling 1,000 miles to take part. So the Kentucky prayer thing that's going on, it's actually a small Christian college that's out there. And this was actually, I had heard about it on the news briefly, but like I had mentioned in other podcasts that we've recorded, I've been trying to stay away from the news, social media. I've been trying to really disconnect from a lot of stuff. And my spare time, I guess it's not disconnecting if I'm watching TV, but more like TV programs, spend time with the family. I've been trying to read a little bit more, even though my brain doesn't do well with reading long stuff. So, I've just been trying to do more than just jump onto Facebook and Twitter, do more than just turn on the news and just see the depressing stuff that's constantly going on there. So, this is something that I briefly heard about a little bit on the news. And then it was brought more to my attention when I went to church and the pastor brought it up. And that, yeah, at this school, during just a regular sermon that they were having, one of the parishioners or just one of the kids that was there came up to the front and kind of just started saying a prayer and doing a confession almost, where he was stating some of the stuff that sin has grasped in his life and some of the things that he has, kind of struggled with in his life, things that he openly admitted to in the front that most people wouldn't talk about, man. You wouldn't talk about all the frailties that you have in life and the things that you struggle with. Most people wouldn't say that out loud to a group of people you don't know, much less even people that you do know. Like I'd have maybe difficulty speaking intimately about things that I struggle with. But yeah, this guy went up there and it moved so many people that the next person went up and did something similar, and then the next person, and then before you know it, it cascade and thousands of people congregated to this church or this small church school, because there's also a college there, and it just kept growing and growing, and it went on for days, where as soon as word got out through social media, I know I was just knocking it a few minutes ago, but this spread on that and it just went crazy. I tried to go on and find a few videos, and I saw some stuff where people were taking videos and stuff like that of it, and that a lot of people really got invigorated with it and got energized to the point where they seeked out to get closer to Christ and go more into it, to explore more and to restart that portion of their life. So it just seemed like a really good story or feel good story, kind of opposed to most of the stuff that we see nowadays where it's kind of negative, and maybe kind of leading towards what I had mentioned before, that I was trying to disconnect from a lot of that stuff just because everything is so doom and gloom nowadays, which I guess maybe isn't the best way for me to handle it by disconnecting, but it just got so much where it was really stressing me out, to where when I saw something like this, I was just like, this is something good that's happening. And I think people need to talk about this stuff as much as they talk about the negativity. So anyways, let me open it up. The article goes into more details, more examples. So definitely check it out. But I know you're half a spiritual man yourself, Noel. I know you've had your own little journey that you've been dealing with. What are your thoughts with this kind of expressing of religion openly like this?
You know, I think it's inspirational, you know, at the very least. You know, I wouldn't say I'm one denomination or another. I'm just kind of more of a person that lives in this world, lives in this universe, that I try to take all the information I can and just kind of live by a certain code of ethics. So it was influenced by Christianity. And if I don't want to say that if I didn't have Christianity or Catholicism in my life, that I wouldn't have these morals, but it definitely is one of the inspirations of why I live the way I live. And I live by a certain code. You know, you don't harm people, you don't lie, you don't, there's a, you know, many rules that I live by, and those are some of them. So I think when people can get together with like-minded individuals, people that have, you know, good moral compass and want to do a good, you know, good deeds for others, and just come together as like a community of good, you know, well-wishing people, I think that's great, you know.
Yeah, for sure, man. I think some of that is needed. This kind of wanting to share and kind of get into a community with people that are going to help you in the times of struggle. And I'm not just talking like financially and with substance as far as food and stuff like that, but sometimes I don't want to sound too snowflakey, but you know, sometimes you just need a place that you can go and speak of some of your trials and tribulations that you're dealing with and kind of get reassurance that, you know, in my case and for, you know, most Christians out there, that there's something or someone out there that's looking out for you and that he has the best intentions for you and wants you to not succeed, but to live a life where joy will overfill you by being a member of this community. And I think just more of those good feelings and those positive vibes should definitely be out there in the world, and more people should talk about this stuff.
You know, I agree. I definitely agree on that. There's enough negativity in the world that, like, you don't even have to look for it. It'll find you. And oftentimes things like this, good stuff, you know, ends up going unnoticed or overlooked. And so it is really cool to see what they're calling a revival, which it looks like they actually describe as, you know, just more of an interest into, you know, the religion and interest in spirituality. So it's cool. And they show pictures and stuff. That's a lot of people, man. It says 3,000 worshipers piled into the college chapel and 4 overflowed facilities throughout the college town. Like, that's pretty impressive, man, to spread, you know, far and wide and then just consistently gather more and more people. You know, there was, not to like go off on a tangent, but like there was a book that I read a while back. I was maybe like 10 years ago, about how to like live better in terms of like health and all that and lifestyle and, you know, developing good habits. And there was like a small part that they did a study that showed that the power of prayer and how it influences your health and your life overall. And they showed like fairly definitive proof that prayer can help you heal. And especially when there's a large enough group, you know, all praying for that and all devoting a part of their energy towards that common goal. There was cancer patients that were half of them were prayed for, half of them there was like a placebo, or they didn't do anything. And the group that was prayed for, the vast majority of them were actually healed, or their cancer went into remission. And it was just like an eye-opening thing for it's hard for scientists to probably believe it, but like, you know, the proof is in the evidence that they gathered. And I believe it, you know, to a certain extent, that your thoughts, your feelings, and all of that is connected to your body and how your and your life in general. And like this aura that you carry with you is going to influence your life, and not just internally, but externally.
Right, right. Yeah, kind of like I mentioned, the community of what you would hope if you find a good church is loving people, accepting people, people that will hear your problem, maybe not be able to solve it financially or with substance or some kind of commodity, but to be able to be supportive and give you a shoulder to listen on and cry on, or whatever the case would be. And, you know, like, let's separate the God portion for now. I think you're right, Noel. I think when you get together and speak positively or speak to show hope in people's lives, I think your mental state can reverse and kind of help health issues. There's been plenty of times where I've gone to the doctor and told them, yeah, I'm having this and this problem. And almost 9 times out of 10, he's asking me, are you dealing with a stress right now? Or are you dealing with something new in your life that's stressing you out? So mental anguish and dealing with things mentally could definitely impact your health. And in the same token, bad things happening could, you know, harm yourself. Also thinking positively and having hope and having encouragement can also affect your body and repair it and give you hope for a better outcome, to the point where I would assume you could see healing and stuff like that. So I'm not trying to put it all into that your brain can heal it, but I think God also has a hand in that. But definitely having good thoughts can bring good outcome as well.
I agree, man. I agree. And, you know, some people might disagree, or they might say that, well, you know, it's God that does it, or it's science that does it. But if God created us and God created the universe, then God created science. And still, it's an extension of God, you know, working through the mysterious ways, whatever you want to call it. And so I think, yeah, you're right. The attitude part of it is very important. And life is always going to be, you know, have its challenges, and everybody faces their own unique challenge. And one person's challenge might not seem something big to someone else, but when you're going through it, it's, you know, it can be pretty difficult. So your attitude while you're dealing with it, I think, is very important. And for example, I was dealing with a few issues myself recently with the, you know, my car stuff, and my attitude towards it, I try to look on the positive end. I try to say, you know what, I got to work safely. You know, my car is in working order. I got to work safely. I have my health. I have, you know, things in my life that are going great. You know, this one part of it that's not going perfectly is just that. It's one part of a grand scheme of things going on in life. So, you know, one bad day doesn't mean it's a bad life. It's just one bad day. And you got to isolate that and have a positive attitude and say, look at what is going right, and see what you can do to make things better.
No, for sure. I think sometimes you do have to look at the bigger picture and see the many blessings that you may have in your life compared to some of this negative stuff that you may be dealing with. And I think that's 100% true. You know, it's funny, man. I, you know, just like you mentioned, you were dealing with some car issues. It was maybe like 3 years ago, maybe around the time COVID started. Before then, I had a kind of a hard line as far as, man, people with this mental anguish, depression thing, I didn't really recognize it or kind of address it or kind of validate it. I was kind of like, man, that's just people looking to blame something or blame somebody for their problems versus actually addressing what their problems are. And I got to say, when the COVID thing happened, just like many people, it really exacerbated some of the problems that people were dealing with. And it made me realize that, yeah, mental depression and stuff like that, it's more real than I was giving value to. And it's something that, you know, a lot of people deal with. Now, do we need to put pillows next to everybody that's dealing with mental problems and kind of, you know, put, you know, soft gloves on them and, you know, stuff like that? I don't know. I really don't know what the cure or the answer is, but I do know that in many cases I would find solace in my religion. And during the COVID thing, it was very difficult. Not that I was questioning my religion, but that I was dealing with some of the mental stuff that I would assume many people with depression was dealing with. So now that COVID's over, now that we're back into some sense of normalcy, you know, there's still things out there that are kind of terrible in the world. But I'm hoping that, you know, the world with stuff like this revival that happened, that things would slowly progress into a good direction. And, you know, I guess that's the only thing we could deal with is that we hope that things would get better, because just like that cancer patient who maybe got better because of hope, those are the things that help us progress to the next day.
I agree, man. I agree with that statement. I think you're on the right path with that. What I want to say is that sometimes, is to add on top of what you were saying, I think sometimes people need to be that change in the world they want to see. You need to be that light that you want others to have. So, for example, if somebody else's candle is not lit, but yours is, spread that light, light their candle as well.
Right.
You know what I mean? So spread that positivity. You never know whose life you're saving, because maybe that was the day they thought it was going to call it quits. And because of your positive attitude, you influence them to keep it going. And maybe they'll influence someone else to keep it going. And that's just all we can really do. We can only control ourselves. So if you want to make the world a better place, start with yourself and having the right frame of mind through all the, you know, the good and the bad, you know, that life will bring. Just always, you know, think about the good and think about the good that you can do.
For sure. You know, it's funny you say that, because, you know, like I mentioned, I'm a Christian. So I feel like the Holy Spirit talks to me, and I could get a sense of feeling, and I have like an inner voice, and not just my inner monologue, but I feel like there's an external voice. So anyway, sometimes I do have that feeling where I'm like, it's telling me to do something that's outside of my norm. To me, I'm kind of like you are, Noel. I'm an introvert, right? That's the one where you're inside and you don't really like
introvert.
To go out. Introvert,
yeah.
Right. So I feel like I have to put myself out there. If I want to be that jokester in a party, I have to force myself to do that. It doesn't come to me naturally, kind of thing. So sometimes when I get this inner voice or this, what I perceive to be the Holy Spirit talking to me, it's telling me to do stuff like talk to people about whatever situation or about myself. And that's not my nature, is to go out there and seek that person and go like, hey, I heard you're dealing with this. Well, I want to let you know that I've dealt with that before, and these were the things that I did, or, you know, kind of open up to these people. But I've more and more felt through the years this want, because people, the Spirit's talking to me and telling me, tell this person your struggle that you had and how it got better. And, you know, the talking to people sometimes, I think, is what most people struggle with. And kind of to tie back to this article, this guy that got up to the podium and started kind of opening his heart to everybody, it cascaded. It made everybody else feel comfortable and say, yes, we're not being judged here. We're going to open up with our things that we do bad and pray for us to be better and to seek to be better people out there. So it cascaded to all these people. So sometimes that's all it takes is for a person to hear a hopeful message from somebody that maybe dealt with something like that and have hope in, and, you know, kind of feel like there's a future or something else that they could do instead of feeling down and gloom and have some hope for the future.
Most definitely, man. If you hear that inner voice telling you to do that, you know, find a healthy way to get that out there. If there's somebody that you can help by giving them that, you know, advice, definitely go for it, because you never know. You know, they might need to hear it. And like I said, God works in mysterious ways. So maybe that voice you're hearing is God's way of sending you as part of the solution to that person's prayer.
Right.
Maybe you're the answer to that person's prayer for that day. And you never know. That's how I look at it. It's like there's so many just, you know, odd things that happen that add up to something. And I do think there is divine influence. I do believe in that. And I think God just does work in mysterious ways where you're not going to understand it. It's a big picture thing that we're not able to see in our everyday lives. But when you take a step back and you take a look at the whole thing, you can see some things add up, and it's just like, wow, you know, he answered my prayer when I needed it the most, and it came in a mysterious way, but it came nonetheless.
For sure.
But yeah, I think we have to wrap it up here. We do want to say thank you very much for listening and joining us on the Freeform Network. We've been running this for quite some time, and we do appreciate you all. So if you're not already, please follow us on Twitter at FFR Podcast. And if you have any questions or suggestions, the email to drop that is ffmquestions@gmail.com. From Freeform Radio, my name is Noel, and we have Daniel here.
Yes, sir, man. I'm parched, man. I'm thirsty. I'm hungry. I'm going to go see what I can find in the fridge. I'm thinking a ham sandwich is kind of calling out to me, man. Maybe I'll make a ham sandwich.
I don't blame you, man. After this this Friday of having to avoid meat, it's like, yeah, got to get your ham in there.
Hell yeah.
Well, all right, everybody. We wish you a great night and a beautiful tomorrow.
Dad.